KWMW Maljamar. KRUI Ruidoso Downs. K256AR Ruidoso.
All right, I'm listening.
It's time for New Mexico in the Morning with your host, Tom A. Reese.
All right, it is 9:07. Our guest this morning, he's with the Roswell SWAT Department there in Roswell, New Mexico. As everything we've been hearing lately and all the news about the school shootings or church shootings, office shootings, doesn't really matter where it's at. We need to prepare ourselves for these situations. And Scott Wren, officer with the Roswell Police Department, has a separate enterprise that he deals with to do just this very thing there in Roswell. But he's also a police officer that responds to these things as well. Let's introduce him this morning. Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show. You guys are trained to go in there and provide active shooting preparedness for whether it's a business or a school.
Well, with the police department right now, I'm assigned to the patrol division. Mm-hmm. I've been a police officer for about 7 years. One of my roles as a police officer is to train other police officers, mainly newer police officers, also some more experience, but with the influx of new officers that we've had, we've been training a lot of the officers on how to respond to an active violent situation.
Right. Were you in Roswell when the Barrendo school situation came about?
I was, yes, sir.
Talk about that a little for a moment and how you guys reacted to that.
Well, I mean, even in a small town like Roswell, there's usually an overwhelming response when this kind of thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
You get all kinds of law enforcement entities that respond. Within a matter of minutes, we had obviously the Roswell Police Department, Travis County Sheriff's Office, State Police. We had Game and Fish, ATF, FBI, right. DEA, you name it. Everybody, anybody and everybody who can label themselves as a first responder was there that day.
And of course, the young man that was involved in that shot two people. One, both of them were classmates. One of them was a female. One is was a 13-year-old boy. I think this year they're both seniors there, or they could have been seniors last year. When you first got there,
Generally, the first person on scene, the first law enforcement, I believe, was a plainclothes officer. He was there to drop off his child, who was actually in the parking lot when the shooting happened. Of course, this specific shooting only lasted, I want to say, about 10 seconds or less, the actual shooting itself. So it happens really, really quickly.
Right.
You know, the child fired two or three shots and then immediately threw down the gun and surrendered when confronted by another teacher.
Right.
So in this specific incident, you know, obviously school shootings are rampant, it seems. Motivations usually vary. Whether it's a specific target for whatever reason, for bullying, for fighting over a girl, whatever the motivation might be, it usually drives how long the shooting lasts, how many victims there are. In this specific instance, it was over before the first responder could even get there. So, I mean, as tragic as it was, obviously, as we know from in the news, it could have been a lot worse.
A whole lot worse. I was in Midland vacationing on that day, and I just left the day before, and there was a situation with a water line out there that led to the schools closing the day before, and then the next day the schools reopened, or that particular school reopened, and I think everybody was meeting there in the gymnasium. But I got the call from several affiliates out here thinking that I was in Roswell at the time, but I wasn't. I was in West Texas. But, you know, I couldn't stay there. I had to come back and do the news updates for our radio station, which by that time and by the way, Kevin Bonner, who's now here with me and along with Don Nickum and several others who have 100 and together we have like 100 back then had 140 years of radio experience. And that was a big key too, Scott, informing the people about what was going on. And we got the word out as soon as possible, as accurately as possible, not having to spook the public even more than it was at that time. Communication is a big key with you guys too when you train for these situations.
Absolutely. And communication in a lot of high stress situations is usually one of the first things that breaks down, unfortunately. You know, whether that's because your body's just responding in a negative way, auditory exclusion, tunnel vision, you know, you just kind of clam up, or too many people trying to communicate at once. You know, everybody's got something important to say, and only one person can be on the radio at a time.
Exactly.
The cell phone towers in town crashed because they were overloaded, obviously, with concerned parents, you know, officers, people trying to figure out what was going on. So communication's a big crutch that we lean on. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work out the way that we'd like it to.
Right, right. How do you try to comfort the public?
Well, I mean, a lot of times comfort can come in preparation, you know, if you're ready for something like that. And a lot of that has to do with each individual person and how they prepare themselves, you know, personally. It's really hard to feel secure after something like that hits home. You know, a lot of that comes with, you know, your own personal healing. We had vigils afterwards at the Roswell Community Center, the visitor center. We got together and had a question and answer forum. You know, parents were able to express their concerns. You know, how could something like this happen? How are we going to prevent it from happening again? You know, I think that helps coming together as a community. Sometimes it's sad that it takes a tragedy for people to come together. But I think Roswell is a very tight-knit community, and we bounced back pretty quick.
Rallied around not only the victims, but everybody was confused about this kid. I mean, he had some issues, but nobody ever thought that that it was going to lead to that. With all these situations that have gone on, Officer Wren, do you guys go back and to prepare yourselves even better to look back at some of the cases, especially those people that have done the shooting and didn't kill themselves? Do you go back, look at their cases, and try to figure out maybe what makes them tick?
Not me personally. I know that there's obviously a large application for that in law enforcement. A lot of times with the local, state and local law enforcement, we stay so busy trying to react to calls for service and, you know, for lack of better terms, damage control with some of these things, you know, crime prevention, simple techniques that each individual person can do in their everyday lives to prevent themselves from being a victim. But as far as focusing on the suspects, profiling, things like that, the FBI, your federal level law enforcement is usually the ones that can dedicate a lot of time and effort into profiling these criminals, prevention, figuring out, like you said, what makes them tick, and possibly preventing future tragedies from happening on that level.
Because this kid in Florida, I mean, after he was captured a few hours later, or maybe the next day, he confessed to those crimes and was, I guess, remorseful in his own way. But I didn't buy it because he said, I'll confess to the crimes if I get, if I'm spared the death penalty. You know, if law enforcement can get some type of psychological evaluation on him while he's alive and maybe make a case model out of it for school teachers and administrators and other people who deal with children like this, can figure out maybe he is a danger to
Well, that's really students. Where it's difficult, you know, is for teachers and law enforcement officials to start picking people out, you know, the cues, things that they might see that would lead them, you know, red flags, so to speak. The hard question to answer is, what do you do to prevent them? You know, you can't just throw them in jail for something that they haven't done yet.
Yeah, because you got to do the crime first, don't you?
Unfortunately, yeah. And then that's why I really try and focus most of my time on preparing people for when violence starts and how to minimize the overall impact when somebody decides to commit a large act of violence. Because one thing's very clear, and I tell people this all the time, if somebody wants to go into a specific location with a large population of people, majority of them unarmed or soft targets, as we call them, they are going to succeed. If they want to go in and kill people, they're going to succeed on some level or another. So when the violence starts, what do you do to protect yourself and those around you? Right. That's what I focus most of my training on.
Well, you wish you had a crystal ball, but unfortunately that's fairy tales. I talked to Police Chief Bernie Kraft in Seminole yesterday because they had a similar situation. One of their kids threatened to shoot up the school, but it never happened. And later they arrested him and said, well, we're just kind of kidding. Well, because everything is going on, you just don't kid. They charged him with two low-level misdemeanors.
Yeah, good.
But I didn't know, Scott, that school district arms their teachers.
That's great. That's excellent.
Yeah, those teachers are carrying. Yeah. Now
Now hopefully they don't know which ones.
Right.
Concealed carry is very important. You know, it's concealed for a reason. You don't want somebody to know that you have a gun until you're ready for them to know.
So do you think that's a deterrent in some way?
Well, I think history has shown most of these large acts of violence happen in, you know, quote unquote, weapons-free or gun-free zones.
Right.
You know, and these people, make no mistake about it, these people that do these mass shootings, in my opinion, they're cowards. Mm-hmm. They don't go into an area looking to kill large amounts of people.
Right.
With opposition. They don't want opposition. 56% of the time that these shootings happen, it's ended by the shooter.
Right.
Because they choose to either take their own life, they surrender, by some other intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Other intervention, 26% of the time it's stopped by law enforcement.
Right.
And 13% of the time it's stopped by a civilian, a victim, somebody who's there being a part of it. So I think that arming people and giving people an ability to protect themselves is extremely important. You know, Second Amendment right. It's your constitutional right to carry a firearm. And
you know it.
I think if you start arming more people in a responsible way, a legal way, then that's going to cut down on a lot of this violence.
What is the protocol, Scott, when you get a call like this?
When you get a call for active violence?
Yes, sir. Active shooter.
Columbine really changed the way that law enforcement responds to these types of incidents. I can speak to how the Roswell Police Department, Travis County State Police in our area are trained. The old train of thought was for SWAT to secure the scene, surround, and call SWAT and let them handle it.
Uh-huh.
It proved extremely ineffective at Columbine because, as we know, kids were actively dying inside while law enforcement was outside doing what they were trained to do. Since Columbine, our agency specifically, along with a lot of other agencies around the country, changed their tactics. When you get a call like this, you don't wait for backup. If you're the first officer on scene, you're the first officer to go in because studies have shown, experience has shown, the earliest intervention is the only effective way to save lives.
The big news coming out of Florida is that one deputy who was a school resource officer did not engage.
Yes, sir. It's a hot topic, obviously. I've seen it all over social media. And it's extremely disappointing. The first time I saw the news conference with the Broward County Sheriff.
Right.
You know, he was disappointed, obviously. It hit him and his department the most, but I think it was extremely disappointing for law enforcement across the nation, you know.
Of course,
the number one thing.
Right.
Go ahead.
Of course, we haven't heard from this man as to why he didn't engage.
I don't think that you will, honestly. Uh-huh. Could he even offer an explanation that would justify what he did that would put people's mind at ease? I don't think so. There's nothing that he could say, in my opinion, that would give an answer as to why. You know, I think I haven't seen the video. They haven't released it.
Right.
From what I hear, the video pretty much explains it all. He did not.
Yeah.
He did not act. It was obvious that the sheriff was disappointed that he didn't act, I think, from the news conference. And that's the only legitimate, fact that I've seen come out is from his testimony during the conference that he was disappointed and they did an investigation. Obviously, he didn't do what he was trained to do. So I've heard conflicting reports that, yes, they were told to stand down. I don't know by who. And honestly, if it was me, I don't care if somebody told me to stand down. I wouldn't listen to protocol. Right. I got somebody inside a school with a gun that are killing kids. I'm going. Met with extreme violence.
Well, you just never thought about this happening 20, 30 years ago, Scott. You just never thought about it. Well, thank you, Scott, for being our guest this morning on New Mexico in the Morning.